Morning. You may have noticed that this is St. Francis Sunday. And Anglicans have a Franciscan order as well. So when Chris and I were on sabbatical this last year, and we spent 3 weeks in Assisi, the only churches permissible in Assisi must be Franciscan. No Benedictines permitted. Just down the road you can have Benedictines. So we were able to go to an Anglican church named St. Leonard's that was permissible because it was Franciscan Anglican. And our priest at the time was a lovely woman from England named Sister Beverly. And she looked after us, and our church was about half the size of this room with some terrible painting at the front that they kept drawing attention to. It had corroded many, many years in the past. Some of us know people like John Michael Talbot, who's a Franciscan, and we will sing a song later by John Michael Talbot, my favorite song by John Michael Talbot, Healer of My Soul. And some of us read Richard Rohr, who's also a Franciscan. So Franciscanism is one of the ecumenical themes in the history of the church. And of course, we were recently visited by the first Jesuit pope, who is a Franciscan kind of Jesuit, the first from Americas and the first from the Southern Hemisphere, Jorge Mario Bergoglio, whom we call Pope Francis. And he was into, in his visit here, demonstrative deeds that drew attention to the themes of St. Francis. He refused to eat, you remember, with Congress so that he could eat with the homeless, which was just the sort of thing Francis would do too, get everyone irritated with him. But I'm a Bible guy, and I am not a professional church historian or a Franciscan historian, and most of the people who talk about Francis and write about Francis are not Franciscans either. So, St. Francis has become everybody's favorite saint. He's on everyone's side, and I have a tendency to agree with a theologian, last name Zimmerman, who contended that St. Francis was the first Protestant. I like that idea. We get him on our team that way. But he wasn't, and that's too bad. Notice the texts that were chosen today in the lectionary. These are selected by people who want to bring out themes about St. Francis. Jeremiah elevated the king who cared for the poor and brought justice, a big theme in Francis's life. I don't know if you paid attention to the last reading on Galatia before the gospel on Galatians. May I never boast in anything except in the cross of Christ. This was a theme of St. Francis. The word rule is used in the verse, and now the Franciscans are even happier because of the rule of 1221. But especially this text was chosen because it says, I bear on my body the marks of Jesus, which is famous in St. Francis because of the stigmata that he's famous for. And if you go to the reliquary at the bottom of Basilica San Francesco in Assisi, you can see clothing and shoes that Francis had to wear because of the stigmata. So that was the reason for that text. But especially the Psalms are chosen because they elevate Francis as someone who loved nature. This is a romantic dimension about St. Francis, and all creatures of our God and King come from the canticle of Brother Sun and Sister Moon, which is printed at the end of your bulletin for you to read this week or to think about. Franciscan probably was not an ecological theologian, but he lived in nature. And so the Psalms that were chosen today are drawing our attention to Francis as someone who wrote that song. But as I said, I'm not a Franciscan. I'm a Bible guy. I am wearing a brown shirt today in honor of St. Francis. If you don't know that, we'll get to that later. But the text I'd like to focus on is Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 to 30. And in particular, I want to look at one word and drill down on this word as a portal into the teachings of Jesus that St. Francis embraced that led him to be the image that we all have of St. Francis. And that term is yoke. Take my yoke upon you. This is an obvious image. It's a yoke that is put over beasts of burden so they can pull things, so that they can be in submission to the power behind it, the farmer. And then it became an image in Judaism, both in the Old Testament and in Rabbinic Judaism, for assuming the yoke of the kingdom, which meant you will begin to obey the Torah completely and all the rulings. The halakot is what they're called in Rabbinic Judaism. So you will follow the yoke of the Torah. Well, Jesus shifts this, as he is wont to do. He shifted it into the yoke, his yoke, and clearly in contrast to the Pharisees, who are his favorite target for critique, which leads to stereotypes about him, but we'll leave that for another time. But he is saying their yoke is heavy, and Peter in Acts 15 explicitly said this, that we could not carry this yoke. And so Jesus says, my yoke is light and easy. We might disagree with him at this point after reading the Sermon on the Mount. But clearly he's saying that because you are connected to me and because of the grace of God that I will unleash, you will be given the power to do what I call you to do. So I think that's the image of yoke that Jesus is using. So we need to ask the question, what is this yoke of Jesus? And to answer this question, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to cheat in the direction of St. Francis. So those dimensions, this word yoke can lead to everything Jesus ever taught about how to live. That word is just enough to open up the door to everything he ever taught. So I will focus on the dimensions of the yoke that draw our attention to San Francesco today, St. Francis, and what he focused on in his life. And so I would like to focus on the yoke of simplicity, or in Franciscan terms, the yoke of poverty. But we're Protestants, so we'll make it simplicity rather than just poverty. All right? Think of the way Jesus lived. Jesus was an itinerant. Some people call him an itinerant charismatic. And that is, he did not have a home. Well, yes, he did. Up the hill a few days to Nazareth, where his mother was probably living. But Jesus didn't stay there. Once he went public in his ministry, he lived on the north side of Galilee, in the hills, and probably in the home of St. Peter. But clearly, Jesus did not have a home. He spent his evenings in other people's homes, making himself the host of meals that he didn't prepare. Unless he caught the fish himself or created miracles where you could catch the fish. Then you could say he prepared it. But he lived off of the bounty of others. He lived an itinerant, charismatic life. And out of that sort of life, when Jesus prayed, give us this day our daily bread, this wasn't a cute story, an image, so that we could have the art of an old man giving thanks over a piece of bread and an old woman in every Christian bookstore with a pair of glasses on the table giving thanks. This was the person who prayed for bread when there was no bread on the table. And he taught his disciples not to have extra pieces of bread, but to go serve him, and someone would provide for them, and they needed to trust God. So it comes out of the harsh realities, not, as the Germans would say, a Spaziergang in the evening, a little walk in the forest. It came out of a rugged reality. So in Matthew 8, we read, "Then a teacher of the law came to Jesus and said, 'Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go.'" Now this is the kind of volunteer everyone wants. And Jesus, in his not very Mr. Rogers way, said, "Foxes have dens, birds have nests, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." You sure you want to follow me? Because there will be no home for you anymore. Then Jesus says in Luke 12:33, "Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys." 30 years ago, I taught this text at Trinity in a course on discipleship in the summer. And because we were Trinity students, we pulled out our Greek New Testament and worked through the syntax in pre-aspect theory days. So we knew more then. And we examined sell. And we examined possessions and your and give and the poor. And there was nothing to find. And a student said, "Sweet Jesus, what does this mean?" And that's exactly the way this text strikes you. I mean, there's no getting around. There's nothing complex about sell your possessions. Buy a person who had nothing. That's exactly what it means for Jesus. Now, he obviously lived off of the bounty of others, so some others had some possessions. So let's not get too Franciscan for the moment, or Shane Claiborne-ish for the moment, but Jesus says this sort of thing. And Mark 12:41-44, Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. This is in Jerusalem. Many rich people threw in large amounts. Good for them. It's impressive. But a poor widow came and put in 2 very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Just the sort of opportunity for Jesus to say something, which he does. Calling his disciples, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." Now, we could go on and on in the Gospels because this stuff shows up everywhere. Blessed are the poor, which Matthew has, blessed are the poor in spirit, which doesn't relieve anybody, just in case you want to know. And he tells the story of Zacchaeus in the Gospel of Luke. And Jesus calls him to himself. And he thinks it's awesome that the Messiah has come to his house, and he's a chief tax collector, and Jesus tells him to give it all away and to pay people back even more than he stripped from them. Zacchaeus is in the gospel, and Jesus experiences hospitality so much so that he tells his disciples, when they go into villages, someone will take care of you. And the first thing Jesus preaches in his inaugural sermon after he became Anglican. In Luke chapter 4, I thought I'd bring that in just to keep us in the safe road. He says, "The gospel is for the poor." So Jesus had this theme, and St. Francis believed it. He took it so seriously that he is known today in Italy as Il Poverello, the little poor man. And that's what he was like. And so I think the theme that we learn from Jesus is intentional simplicity. Intentional simplicity. He wants his disciples to live an intentionally simple life, not so they can be ascetics and discipline themselves and feel religious and different than all the rest of the world. He wanted them to avoid the idolatry of possessions because he knew that possessions had the capacity to freeze the heart and clench the hands. He wanted them for a freedom of simplicity so they would avoid hoarding resources as insurance against the future and all that it might bring. And he wanted them to be intentionally simple so his disciples could distribute their bounty to those who needed it more. More of us could be more simple. All of us can reduce. Each of us will require intentionality for us to take the next step in simplicity. Francis was that way. He was baptized in San Rufino Church on the hill on the south side of Assisi. There are two parts to Assisi, the cool part up on the hill and the flat part in the plain below the hill city. Francis was baptized at San Rufino as a baby, the son of a very wealthy merchant named Pietro Bernardone. That's a cool name, Pietro Bernardone. Francis lived the party life. He was wealthy. He liked battle, and he was captured in a battle with the Perugians, just a few, an hour away in Perugia. That young woman from the United States who was in prison in Italy was in Perugia. He was captured in a battle with the Perugians, spent time in prison, was shaken to the core of his life, and returned home after a few years, a broken and searching man. He spent hours in his father's home off the central piazza, which is still there, the Piazza di Comune. To break his misery and depression, he decided to join another army to fight in the south. But on his way to this battle, he had an encounter with God south of Assisi in a place called Spoleto. And he was deeply converted in his life. And so he began to return home. And in the return, he decided that he had encountered Jesus. He must live like Jesus. And so he sold all his possessions, including his horse. And he found consolation just before he got back to Assisi in a little church just down the road from Assisi, down the hill, outside the city walls, called San Damiano, which is the home today of Francis's sister order, the St. Clares. And Francis sold all his possessions, his military gear, and he finds solace. His father was not happy at the weirdness and eccentricities and exaggerations of his son. And every time his father went off on a trip, in a business trip, he was convinced that when he returned home, his possessions would be gone, that Francis would have given them away. So his father proceeded legally against St. Francis to dissociate himself and to make him no longer his legal son. And so they had a big showdown in the piazza. And Francis appeared before his father with a judge and also with his favorite priest. And his father asked him to dissociate, essentially. And St. Francis disappeared off the Comune into a small room, and he came out. And the story is that he came out naked, but he actually came out in a hair shirt, which makes it G-rated instead of R-rated. And Francis was asked to speak to his father and to the judge, and this is what he said. From now on, he said, I will say, our Father who art in heaven, and not my father, Pietro di Bernardone. And he dissociated himself from his family, or his family dissociated himself. And then St. Francis began to do his work of mercy in the area around Assisi. He rebuilt San Damiano, this little chapel at the bottom of the hill, because it had fallen into disrepair. He also built the great church that is now surrounded by St. Mary of the Angels in the lower plane. But that would be to take us to another area. But he then began to collect brothers and sisters who were attracted to this way of life, that he was protesting against the indulgences and the wealth and the way all the established people of Assisi were living in their battles and in their extravagances and indulgences. And he protested, and he collected brothers. They called themselves Friars Minor because they didn't ever want to get any title other than a title that would diminish their significance. And he began to wear a habit. It was nothing other than a cloak, and it was ugly, and it was brown. And it wasn't as fancy as any alb that is worn in the world today. And you can see Francis's tunic in the reliquary, and it's patchwork. It's every time he got a hole in it, he got another patch. And he had no taste for colors and matching. Francis insisted that all the brothers and sisters beg. When you became a member of the Franciscan order, you must have sold everything you owned, and everything that you got from it had to be given to the poor, and you entered with nothing. And so he established this order in the rule of 1221. It took him forever to become an official order because he refused to be a leader, just like Francis. Francis, by the way, is a guy you would have invited for dinner once. And as he left, you would say, never again. The rule in life of these brothers, he said in the rule of 1221, is this, namely to live in obedience, in chastity, and without anything of their own. Now, as I said earlier, Francis wore a brown habit, and I wore my brown shirt as a symbol of this, because brown evokes for me, the color brown, it evokes St. Francis's commitment. I once told a story here about the great Alec Guinness, who was acting in France, and he was acting the part of Father Brown in a Chesterton movie. And at the evening, he realized it would be a few hours before he had to do anything, so he went to get a drink. And then he decided to walk back to his hotel. He was wearing a black habit, right? Probably Benedictine. And as he was walking along, a little boy came up and grabbed his hand and just talked. He said, a nonstop prattle. And as he walked, all of a sudden, the boy just kept going, and Alec Guinness, who couldn't speak French well enough, said, I was scared to death to speak, because he would suddenly realize I wasn't a priest. So he kept his mouth shut, and then all of a sudden, the boy said, bonsoir, monsieur, and he disappeared through a hedge to his home. Well, that habit that he wore evoked safety of a priest. The habit of St. Francis evokes another message. It evokes the message of simplicity and poverty. And Chris and I, every morning after breakfast in Assisi, walked from the area by San, we were halfway between San Rufino and St. Clair. This is not very far, but the hill's about like that. So when you get to the top at 60, you know you're at the top. In fact, you know you're at the top before you get there. So we would walk down the hill of our street to St. Clair. There's no grass in the city of Assisi. It's all stone because that's all it is. And we would get to St. Clair, then we would walk across north, sort of northwest, to San Francesco. And we would walk through the Comune, the Piazza, and then we'd climb a little hill because we usually took the upper path. And we would walk along just in a street, couldn't see anything. There'd be an opening, and we could see the great valley, the Spoleto Valley, that looks down on Assisi, and you could see St. Mary of the Angels rising like Mount Kilimanjaro out of the plain. And then we would come around a hill, and there was the beautiful Basilica San Francesco. And it was usually about 8 o'clock in the morning, all right, 8:30. We'd walk down a little ways, never to the church, and then we would start our way back, and we'd stop at the greengrocer, and then we'd stop for coffee at Cafe San Rufino every day. That was a tough life we had. But as we came up the hill, we always encountered dozens of Franciscan monks walking to morning prayers. And every day I saw those brown habits, I thought of the message of simplicity, because that's what it evokes. Francis reminds us we don't have to become Franciscans or crazy, which was what he was, sort of. A very radical exhibition of his posture toward poverty. But we can learn as a sacrament of simplicity and intentional simplicity that we too are called like St. Francis, because Jesus calls us all to a life where we can use our possessions for the good of others. And we can cut back and give more to those who are in need. Protestants have worked this out in two ways. There are people like Shane Claiborne, who lives in the simple way in Philadelphia and wears weird clothes. I've told Shane he's got to get a better person who makes his clothes, but he makes them himself and they look like it. But he wants to say something to the way we dress and the kinds of clothing we wear and the kinds of monies that we spend on the sorts of things that we wear. But Chris and I were recently in Manitoba, in Canada, speaking to the Mennonites in a fairly small village of 4,000 people with 13 different Mennonite churches. They get along like Baptists. And it was a nice church, but it wasn't extravagant in any way. And on our way back from the church, onto the airport, the pastor was driving us in his car that we were praying would get us there. The air conditioning wasn't working, and it was 85 degrees, but he reminded us it was high desert and it was dry. It was hot. And I said to him, "Is your church wealthy?" He said, "Very, but you'd never know it. We live a simple lifestyle so we can take care of the poor." And they've invited 5 Syrian families who are refugees to live in Altona. This is the way the Mennonites have worked out the Franciscan message of simplicity. Now, I could go on and on and on, and I'm not supposed to go on and on and on. This isn't a Baptist church. But the last thing I want to say about Francis is this. The only nice thing, part of the yoke of Francis, was the yoke of the Eucharist, daily celebration of the Eucharist. The only nice thing he had was a chalice and a paten, which is a little silver tray for the Eucharist. And they survived his life, I think. I don't trust anything that's in a reliquary, but we're pretty sure this was St. Francis's Eucharist cup, chalice, and his paten, bright, silver, and nice. And he rebuked pastors near and far for the way they dressed during Eucharist services, for the condition of the linens, for their lack of reverence and their lack of genuflection when they saw the cross and the elements of the Eucharist. And he worked hard for people to see that the essence of a life of poverty is not a heroic life. It is the imitation of the man who went to the cross, who died for the sake of others, whose cross formed him into a cruciform existence so that he could live a life of poverty in order to serve others. So I leave you with this, that when Jesus said, "Take my yoke upon you," at least he meant the way he lived, the sort of theme about poverty that gave rise to the figure of San Francesco di Assisi. Thank you.